Hello, everyone out there. This is Trevor with Tea Time Reports. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. It is greatly appreciated for all the support out there. We have a lot to talk about in this episode. We're going to be discussing Solo Leveling Season 1 and Season 2, this kind of new breakout anime as of late. Season 1 came out in 2024, obviously, so still a relatively new show. I want to talk about just overall, you know, recapping and reviewing not only season one, but season two as well. Talking about just breaking each season down to the best of my ability. I know I might miss maybe some characters or like references or something like that, but you know, I do hope that I'm able to kind of touch on everything important in terms of the fandom aspect of things, like trying to, you know, cover all my bases. But in season one, there's a lot to kind of break into, kind of the world building of this universe and all the lore. But I think it's really important, obviously, to talk about, you know, before anything. If you are a new listener or a returning listener, thank you so much for tuning in to an episode of our show. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads, and YouTube at Tea Time Reports. And definitely keep an eye out for Twitch as well. We are possibly going to be looking into that. But yeah, season one, the world building aspect and the kind of intro to the main character, Sun Jinwoo, in front of a severely wounded Jinwoo, a mysterious quest window pops up. On the verge of death, Jinwoo decides to take on the quest, which makes him the only person who can level up. So, hence the name Solo Leveling in the title. But, yeah, so Jinwoo is essentially how to break this world down. Before episode one of the show, I think it was 15 years prior, these portals started opening up in the real world, and these portals led to dungeons. And as soon as these portals opened up, simultaneously, people awoke with magic power and abilities. And, you know, it is kind of like it's kind of like League of Legends, you know, like when you go into the dungeon, you have a team, a strike team. Of your what they were called when people started waking up with magic, they called them hunters. So the portals opened up, the dungeons were inside the portals, hunters, humans, you know, kind of awoke as well. So something strange happened to the world, and no one really has looked into it, even through season two. It's just kind of been, let's keep, you know, attacking the problem. So, you know, with that aside, the hunters awoke in the human race, and then the portals opening pathways, which are known as dungeons. And if you do not beat the dungeon by defeating the dungeon boss, what they would call is a dungeon break. And a dungeon break is essentially when all the magic beasts and demons and horrible creatures inside the portals get to break out into the real world. So they get out of that portal. So the hunter teams that are assembled, the strike teams, have to go in there to each portal and annihilate not all the beasts and demons, but they have to eliminate the dungeon boss. And if they're able to do that, then they're able to extract resources, gain valuables, get armor, weapons, all that shit, and the dungeon will close. And they've pretty much killed the dungeon. They've eliminated that dungeon. But there's a twist to dungeons. Each dungeon has its own individual power ranking, and the power rankings go as follow. And this goes for demons, the bad guys inside the portals, and the hunters, and the level of power resonating and emitting from the portals. So you could have an S rank, which is the top tier, Like S rank is like they're the best. Best fighters, best beasts, demons, hunters, the strongest portals or dungeons to try and conquer and defeat. And then you have A rank, B rank, C rank, D rank, and then E rank. Well, with that being said, you know, you can have an E rank dungeon which is meant for E rank hunters, or an E rank dungeon that could be easily eliminated by D rank or C rank hunters. And, you know, vice versa with everything. So there could be a C rank dungeon, an A rank dungeon. There can be S rank hunters, which are very rare. A rank hunters, which are very, very good. But when hunters start battling outside of their rank, you can just clearly see the discrepancy and the disparity with power, ability. You know, sometimes you could see, you know, a D rank or a C rank hunter putting up some work, but he or she is overachieving. They are not really a match. So say if an E rank was trying to take on an A rank hunter, that A rank hunter is going to fucking annihilate that E rank. It's just how it is. Like, just with ability, power. But yes, getting into the summary I read off, in front of a severely wounded Jinwoo, a mysterious quest window pops up on the verge of death. Jinwoo decides to take on the quest, which makes him the only person who can level up. So this is where it gets interesting, because as a hunter, you are the only way you can get more power is if you have a second awakening. And if you have a second awakening, you get more power. You say if you're a C rank hunter and you have a second reawakening, you're probably going to be a B rank or maybe even an A rank hunter, possibly even an S rank hunter. So there's a lot of possibilities there, but you're not going to make a massive leap, like a massive leap. You'll get more power, but traditionally a second awakening is rare in itself. But with Jinwoo, he starts out as an E rank. He's an E rank hunter, and he's also commonly known as the worst hunter and weakest hunter of all time. And in this first season, it's kind of not only an introduction to Jinwoo and just how much growth you get to see him go from episode 1 to the finale of season 2, but you get to just see the world as it is through a kind of a very a observer at the time, because Jinwoo wasn't really strong enough or able to fight much in his early stages. And him and his strike team, who they know each other, they go on raids, which they call them raids all the time, dungeon raids, if you will. And you know, he has to kind of adapt to every situation because he is very weak and also very poor. His mother has a permanent sleeping disorder that no one can cure. He's barely keeping her medical bills paid and keeping his sister in school. And he has no money for weapons or armor or anything to propel his hunting career, because that's how it is viewed. These hunters are having careers. And in this opening season, we see him go through some raids, struggle, get injured, get healed up by the healers, and there's also different classes of hunters. You have the mage types, you have the warrior types, you have the healers, and you have the tanks, and also the assassin builds, and there's sub builds, assassin, archer, ranged, mage, you know, necromancer, summoning magic, fucking dancing, but with like choreography with your sword. There's a lot of different like things that are involved into each individual hunter. There's a lot of individualism, not only with the cosmetics, but with, you know, fighting styles and just overall aura, which is also heavily discussed. It's like power level, but they don't talk about it in terms of numbers. It's talked about in terms of like feeling. Like a very powerful hunter can feel a very powerful demon's presence or other powerful hunter's presence. It's kind of just like a sixth sense almost. But we get to see throughout this first season not only some raids, discussing other hunters, just breaking the world in a sense, in terms of, you know, getting the audience in tune with what's going on in the story. And eventually we get into kind of like the main plot line of season one, which is an ultra rare event. It is a double dungeon. So there's variations to the dungeons / portals. So say they send a strike team in, the double dungeon will appear to be like a normal dungeon, but once they defeat the first dungeon boss, a new path will appear, and you have to go down that path and defeat that dungeon, the true dungeon boss, otherwise the dungeon won't close. You have to complete the dungeon entirely. So when you go down that double dungeon, it could be an entirely new dungeon that could be so far out of that strike team's power level. So say a C-rank dungeon appears, a C-rank strike unit goes in to take care of it, and then the double dungeon, the second dungeon, it could be an S-rank dungeon, and a C-rank team goes in and gets annihilated horribly by S-rank demons and beasts, which they would have no chance against. You will see the disparity even with the demons, the beasts, and the dungeons, of course. And it's very interesting, in my opinion. It just reminds me of video games, and it's awesome. And there's also red dungeons or red gates. So when you enter a dungeon, it looks like a regular one, but when you enter it, it literally is a whole different world. And you could be in there for years, weeks, days, until you find and kill the dungeon boss. But the red gate won't let you leave the dungeon, so you're trapped inside it once you go in, until you defeat the boss. So it prohibits any backup from arriving or any more supplies being given, and you could just lose entire strike teams to those red gates. That's a different conversation, and we do see several of them, especially in season two. But yeah, no, after, you know, in the opening sequencing, we see obviously the double dungeon, Jin-Woo gets left for dead by his strike team, essentially, but he also kind of sacrifices himself while figuring out this, like, god temple puzzle. But it was like an S-rank dungeon. And so before he dies, though, or before he was about to die and be annihilated by these statue knights, he had this, like, pop-up like you would have on your fucking laptop, but, like, a pop-up, like, yes or no question. And it was like, do you accept this quest? Blah, blah, blah. He says yes. And he wakes up in a hospital fully healed. And he has these pop-ups and these side quests, daily exercise quests, rewards, inventory, all of this that no one can see, but he can manage and, you know, add skill points to certain things. And it's just so awesome how detailed it is. And it's really just overall pretty sick. But in this first season, you know, there's a lot in regards to, like, damn, you see him as the weakest hunter, then he gets picked on and messed with quite a bit, and it really didn't help in terms of you know, character development. He's not really going to have sympathy. And, you know, it's okay, I guess, because he doesn't. But he does have a moral compass, which you have to appreciate, and you really can only appreciate. I'm trying to pull up, like, a full character list of the show, and I should have that in a second, but in that first season, after the double dungeon tragedy, where pretty much most of his strike team gets annihilated, and then the survivors leave him to die so they could survive, and then he pretty much, to a few people, they think he had a second awakening, but they didn't know to what extent, because his special ability, if you will, is that he always gets stronger. Every fight, he is leveling up, he's gaining attribute points, skill points, new items, new inventories, destroying new dungeons, reaching new heights. And that's the one thing I love about Sung Jin-Woo, is because he was so used to being shit on and dogged on by everyone. And he just wanted to, you know, once he had the opportunity to get this power, he wasn't going to let it go, one. But two, he was never going to stop trying to get better. And that's what we're seeing. He's in the first season, he learned of the chance to get this thing called the Elixir of Life to help his mother get out of this eternal sleepness disease. And he, you know, taking a crack at that, tracking down the ingredients, the different things he'll need to build the Elixir of Life and construct that to help his mom out. But he's also learning new things about this, what he calls the system, all these little pop-ups that are allowing him to kind of manage him, his inventory, his skills, his athleticism, his quests, his rewards, all that, but like only him. It seems like he's the only one. And yeah, the first season was a great introduction, and especially considering, you know, he does meet a friend, and I'm gonna look up this character list again, bear with me. Yu Jin-ho, who is a rich kid, I don't want to say like a spoiled rich kid, but this guy that's going to inherit a massive business and wants to start a guild. We'll talk about the guilds in a second, but he kind of knows about Jin-woo's powers, and he's kind of becoming his right-hand man, if you will. Not in terms of equivalency, because he's only a D-rank hunter. And after Sun Jin-woo starts to get into, you know, he reawakens, he's fully healed, he's alive, he's leveling up, he's hitting quests, he's getting rewards, getting new items, getting more money. He's clearly like an A or like an A rank hunter by the end of season one, and Yu Jin-ho, he knows that. The S rank hunters, like I said, are incredibly rare. You do meet a few, Chong Jong-hee, and he's also known as the ultimate weapon. Also, President Bike and Cha Hae-in, the dancer. She's badass as fuck. And then we also meet Chairman Go, the chairman of the Hunters Association, which is pretty much like a department of the government that has hunters employed for them, but they also oversee the hunter guilds, which hunter guilds are managements and like pretty much associations of hunters, and there's seven major ones in Japan. And they fight, not only they don't fight each other, but they each have their own responsibilities, strengths, and weaknesses, and they each are trying to recruit new hunters all the time. But they're also trying to manage more and more gates, because inside each dungeon are mana crystals, resources, weapons, knowledge, tons of different things that you can gain to your advantage. So there's always like a pendulum swing of battles. So we get very close to some of them in the first season, to a few of the guilds, the Hunters Guild and I think it's the White Tiger Guild or the White Lion Guild. I'm not sure. I can't remember the name. But yeah, we get to see that, but it's really cool. It really is. It adds an element of politics, but also, you know, there's that future, you know, drama and power grab that we know is going to happen. But yeah, no, in season one overall, I think Rotten Tomatoes has it perfect. It's at 100%. It's a 10 out of 10. It really is. The RottenTomatoes.com has it at a 100%, and the audience has it at a 90%. I do have this at a 10 out of 10. I think this is a great first season. It introduces you to the beasts. It introduces you to the rules of the universe. The world building is really awesome. The animation is so amazing, beautiful, sleek. The choreography and just the drawing overall is sick. Character development and growth is rapid, but at the same time, makes sense. And I just really overall love the concept, if you will, of this show. Adding in a strong plot line and overall strong-ass writing, I think this is my favorite anime. And that's just season one, which is crazy. You know, see, and I think there's only 13 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. 12 episodes in season one. And it really is good. It really is good. I'm looking through the episodes here. There's a lot of growth. Episode 9 is really good. When Jinwoo fights, I can't remember that guy's name, but he fights one of the Hunters Association's hunters and realizes that this guy's a serial killer because inside the dungeons there's no security cameras and you can literally be a serial killer, rob people, kill your fellow hunters to steal their gear, steal their money. You literally could do anything inside the dungeons. And people, you find out that people and hunters and certain strike teams are taking advantage of that. And then there was also an instance where Jinwoo was on a strike team with a very, very, you know, solid strike team overall with power, but he was kind of already ascending in terms of, you know, his own solo leveling process. So he already outranked C rank and D rank and B rank hunters. There was a certain strike team that he went along with, and they were going to pretty much let him die to the dungeon boss so that they could steal all the glories, rewards, and resources. And pretty much Jinwoo wasn't having any of that. He kills the entire strike team. But the leader of that strike team, his brother, is a S rank in America. So that guy flies over, you know, after he was, you know, not busy over there. Obviously, finding out his brother was dead is huge news, but he is a part of a massive guild in the U.S. So getting over to to Japan is, you know, that's a big hassle. So he was able to get over there in season 2, which we'll talk about. But no, just overall, I love this show. This first season to me, like I said, is a 10 out of 10. The character development, the writing, the concept, the vibe, everything about it. It really was a perfect opening season to get you enthralled with the characters, enthralled into the story, and captivated into the story as well. Especially considering, you know, how a lot of people, you know, a lot of people, I don't know. I've heard mixed reviews on this show for the main review and main recap and overall summary that there's no actual character development. Like, he just gets stronger and more badass. Like, it's just anime. And I'm like, no, I disagree with that completely. I'm not going to sit here and say that they go so in-depth into characterization, but bro, when it comes to attention to detail, they spare no expense. And when we're talking about Solo Leveling Season 2, it has a 95% rating on the Rotten Tomato meter for the audience score. There is no official tomato meter score on RottenTomatoes.com as of right now. But Season 2 came out this year. And, you know, we'll talk about the future of the show, obviously, after my little review here of Season 2. But this season's even better than Season 1, in my opinion. If I could give this a higher review out of 10 out of 10, I would. But, I mean, it is so badass. Like I was saying about the Red Gates, we run right into one in this opening sequence in Season 2. Some of the stronger hunters and guilds and the Hunters Association members are starting to realize who Sun Jingwoo is and what his power could be, because more and more people are being saved by him and he's being seen by more people and he's leaving an impact and also raising questions. And it definitely, you know, gets crazy. The mega dungeon, if you will, against the high orcs, that is probably my favorite episode. And I think that was episode 6 of season 2 was really awesome. Really good episode, in my opinion. I also really did like, I guess I could say, episode 8 as well, when he defeats the demon castle and gets the elixir of life and gets his mother out of the eternal sleeping disease, is a really good episode as well. Very fulfilling. And he initially, something we haven't even talked about, there's this apparent big failed raid where a dungeon break took over an island called Jeju Island, and massive ants created a dungeon break, took over this island, and the world kind of had to retreat. And they had three raids attempted on this island, and they failed over and over and over again. And they're going in for a fourth. So at the end of this season, we get to see that fourth raid come to a conclusion, and honestly, you know, a win for the humans. They cleared the island, and you know, while that was happening, you know, it didn't go as planned for the hunters because Jinwoo didn't even go because he wanted to spend time with his mother who just woke up. But he had to eventually realize, oh damn, these guys are gonna get fucked over if I don't go over there and help them. So he exchanges himself using one of his crazy techniques to transfer across the world and get to the raid on time. And again, this is a raid with real world implications. They are battling these beasts, not in a portal slash dungeon, but in real world. So they're trying to reclaim this island that was taken years ago. And they were able to do so, but Jinwoo pretty much showed the world his insane power. His absolute insane power. So he put the world on notice. But, you know, it's going to also mean a lot of people are going to come, you know, and try and challenge him. He's going to be a popular, you know, piece of notoriety and you know, publicity. So he's going to be a celebrity. And that's going to bring a lot of unwanted attention. So, you know, season three, I assume, will have a little bit of that. But I'm really glad that this season ended the way it did. It was really badass. The fight scene with the Black Ant was insane. Jinwoo's necromancer ability with his assassin builds. He's a crazy combat hunter, but he can also have he has crazy spells, crazy magic. He can rise dead beasts from the dead. He can reawaken dead beasts and add them to a shadow army, and he can add those shadows into people's actual shadow, and they can follow that person around so he can track them, sense if they're okay. This season was so badass. Like, this season was insanely badass. And I just wish that we got, like, I want more, you know? Like, and that's just me being like, ah, damn. Like, me being a little impatient, and I get that. But it's just like, damn. I really do wish that there was more. I mean, the characters are just so badass. They really are. And I think that that's respectable, especially with the cliffhanger that we were kind of left with. We saw two magic beasts kind of entering through their own created portals. And then we also saw Sun Jinwoo's dad in a couple little cameo spots, you know, here and there. He washed up on shore speaking in demonic dungeon talk. And he was like, do you guys know anything about the portals? What's going on? I've been in the portal. I was trapped in a red gate for like 10 years. And, you know, he came out, he smacked up this S rank hunter, the one that was actually trying to avenge his brother in season two. And this one, I forget his name. I should have it here. Bear with me. Huang Dongsu, his brother, the S rank hunter. He's crazy strong, but he smacked him around. We also got to see Ma Dong Wook. We also got to see An Suk, who was badass, the S rank healer that joined the raid at the last minute. There was also we got some Kenzo Tanaka, was pretty badass. I'm trying to see who else. I'm just excited for what's to come, because like I said, that last cameo scene in season two, it definitely got questions stirring in my head just overall. Like, what's going to happen? Is Jinwoo going to have the ability to travel through the dungeons to the demon's world, the demon world? Which, that's what I have a theory of. I think that the portals are cracking because it's going to be, at some point, the human's reality versus the demon's reality, the demon slash beasts, because I feel like the dungeon slash portals are the median between their two worlds, and at some point they're going to meet for some reason, and it could be the system propelling it, but it's definitely an interesting conversation, to say the least. It's a show that I really recommend everyone out there try and get into, try and check out. The animation is crazy. The storytelling is amazing. The world building is captivating. There's just so many interesting and intriguing aspects to this show that add so many layers of just detail, thought, and just nerd, honestly, galore. And I really do appreciate that. But I think this show is a 10 out of 10 through two seasons. I cannot wait for season three, but unfortunately, there has been actual no talk of season three from anyone. So I really hope that, you know, we get word of that sooner rather than later. I was diving into Reddit, diving into the web pages, man, and I couldn't find a dang thing. So I could be just sleeping at the wheel here, but no, I think that if we could get an announcement before the end of the year, that would definitely be preferable. But Solo Leveling, the show, it's going to be the new thing. I can just see it now, and it probably already is to so many out there, but I could see it possibly just being that new thing. You know, like, it really could grow to new heights, to invincible type of heights, possibly higher. And I think that the potential for this show is there, and a lot of people that haven't seen it out there, if you're listening in now, you need to go check it out. You do. You need to go check Solo Leveling out. You might not stop watching it. I've been rewatching it. Once I finish it, I just rewatch it. Like, I might oversaturate myself with it, but it's like Vinland Saga to me. It's so interesting and so detailed, so intricate. Vinland Saga obviously has more of that naturistic, religious type of aspect to it, but I think that they both are still impactful, not only with storytelling, but with the visuals. And this show is insane. It really is. And it just, sometimes it's hard to even describe it, but it really just hits home if you know what I mean. But everyone out there, thank you so much for tuning in to our review of Solo Leveling Season 1 and Season 2 over here at Tea Time Reports. It's greatly appreciated. Stay safe, stay awake, and peace.